Today, I want to talk about Hasidism and Neo-Hasidism in our communities. What's the historical background for Hasidus? So there are two major events that take place for the Jewish people in the 17th century. Two devastating events. The first is the Khmelnytsky massacre, the Gzeros Tach V'Tat. In brief, in the 17th century, most of the land in the Ukraine was owned by absentee Catholic Polish landlords who ruled over Cossacks, a tribe from Asia, native Slavic serfs. In 1648, Bogdan Khmelnytsky led a revolt against the Polish leadership and specifically murdered Jews who were the tax and rent collectors. This was also a religious war, pitting the Greek Orthodox against the Catholics. Approximately 100,000 Jews and 300 Jewish communities in Poland and Lithuania were killed. And again, this tragedy is what's known as the Gzeros Tach V'Tat, because in Hebrew it was Tach V'Tat, that's the year 5408 and 5409. Now, the second major event and devastating event was the Shabsai Tzvi episode. After the tragedy of the Khmelnytsky massacre, the revolt, the Jews are devastated and they're hoping for some good. They are primed for the Mashiach. They are fooled into thinking that Shabsai Tzvi is the Mashiach. On Shavuos of 1665, his trusted assistant, Nathan of Gaza, proclaims that Shabsai Tzvi is the Messiah, and he excites the masses that much of the Jewish world believes in. And Shabsai Tzvi did a lot of unorthodox things. He commanded we should sacrifice the Korban Pesach outside the Mikdash. He ate forbidden fats. He canceled the fast day of Shivasar B'Tamuz of Tisha B'Av and Shabbos to some extent. And he distorted Kabbalistic ideas to support these positions. Shabsai Tzvi traveled to Constantinople, where he expected the Sultan to recognize him as the King of Kings. But the Sultan arrested him, and Shabsai Tzvi eventually converted to Islam. And most people at that point gave up their belief in him, and this was horribly disappointing and embarrassing for the Jewish community. Now, in the 18th century, people are feeling disenfranchised by the elitist leadership. The rabbi in each town had his students, and power was in the hands of the rabbi and the wealthy. And if you weren't educated or wealthy, then you did not feel important until the Baal Shem Tov comes along. The Baal Shem Tov, born in 1700, dies in 1760, comes from a poor family. He was not regarded as a great scholar. He was a teacher's assistant and an innkeeper, but he studied Kabbalah. He lived in solitude with his wife in the Carpathian Mountains and then came back to society when he was 36 years old. He revealed himself. He gained fame as a miracle worker and a wandering visionary teacher, and he lived in Mezhebaj in the Ukraine. This was the founding city of Hasidus. He accepted all people and he taught through parables and made even the most ignorant people, feel special. He dies in 1760, and he has two major students, Rav Dov Ber, the Maggid of Meserich, and Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polonia. The Maggid of Meserich was the more prominent student because he transmitted Hasidic ideas to the Hasidic giants of the next generation, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, Rav Elimelech of Lizhansk, and Rav Sher Zalman of Liadi, better known as the Alter Rebbe, or the first Rebbe of Chabad. And these three Hasidic giants spread Hasidism and Hasidus northward into Belarusia and Lithuania and western to Galicia and central Poland. Dr. Rachel Elior, in her work, The Origins of Hasidism, wrote that the Baal Shem Tov was a mystic who was interested in blurring or obscuring the borders between the spiritual and the material dimensions of existence, as well as in transcending the borders between the divine presence and human consciousness. He attempted to liberate his followers from the bondage of reality by placing them in a new vantage point where the divine constantly illuminates the profane and the mundane is constantly yearning to the divine. And the Baal Shem Tov stated time and time again that the whole earth is full of his glory. There is no place void of him. Divinity is in every place. Right? The focus for Hasidus was the pasuk from the Navi, Meloch al Aretz Kavodo. The whole earth is full of his glory. And Dr. Elior also writes that whereas Kabbalah relegated mystical practices to an elite few who separated themselves from the community and followed a pious way of life in order to devote themselves to sacred matters, The Baal Shem Tov saw every Jew as having the mystical potential to recognize the animating divine essence that suffuses everything. And she also writes that this conception that every person was created on earth to do wonderful things, and everyone could reach the level of our teacher of Moshe, reflected a new perception of man, a new perception of equality and freedom as part of an outlook that overturned conventional hierarchies, which discriminate among different people, different access to the site of Kabbalah, and different modes of worship. Everyone can achieve greatness, according to the Baal Shem Tov. But there are those who are opposed to Hasidus. Famously, the Noda Yehuda, in the middle of the 1700s, it has a tshuva, Noda Yehuda Madura Kama Yordea Simon Sarigim, where he was asked about what's the correct text for the Shem Yichud Kutche Bricho that the Hasidim added before they would perform certain mitzvahs. They'd say, L'shem Yichud Kutche Bricho. And the Rabbi Cheskel Landau writes this tshuva that he says, you're asking me what the right nusach is. You should be asking me if you should say it all together. And he criticizes this new movement. He says, B'daredu hazeh ki azu az Torah Hashem mekor mayim chayim shnei ha-talmidim bavli v'rushalmi. He says, in our generation, there's a new group that left the Torah of God. And the source of living waters, the two Talmuds, the Bavli and Rishalmi, lachatzov lehem boros nishbarim, to dig for themselves broken cisterns, umisnasim berum levavam, and in the haughtiness of their hearts, they exalt themselves. Kol echad omer, anochi haroa li, anochi haroa, each one says, I see, I'm the one who sees, v'lidim tzchushari shemaim, to me the gates of heaven have opened, uvavri holam iskayem, and on account of me, the world is sustained. And he says, Elu hei machrivei ador, these people are the destroyers of the generation. And he says about this generation, he quotes a pasuk, or he twists the pasuk in Hosea, Perek Yudal, pasuk Yud, where he says, Yesharim darchei Hashem, v'tzadikim yelchu bahem, v'chasidim yikashlu bahem. That the God's ways are just, the righteous shall walk in them, and the chasidim shall stumble in them. The Navi actually said, uposhim yikashtuba, but he changed the word to chasidim. Interestingly enough, one of his grandchildren wanted to print his tshuvos, and he was a chassid, and he asked the Rebbe if he should change the word in the tshuva to the correct word. So the Rebbe said, your grandfather turned Poshim into Chassidim, now you want to turn Chassidim into Poshim. Another version of the story is that later publishers wanted to avoid the controversy, and they flipped the word back, and someone came to Noda Yehuda and said, look what they did. He said, no, I turned Poshim into Chassidim, and they turned Chassidim into Poshim. In any case, the opposition to Chassidus in the first few decades of the movement, notwithstanding Noda Yehuda's tshuva, did not arouse serious opposition. However, when the first groups of Hasidim were organized in Belarus and Lithuania, the leaders of the Shklov community asked the Vilna Gaon what policy they should adopt towards the new sect, and he replied that it should be fought. The Vilna community decided to close the shuls of the Hasidim, burn their works, and excommunicate them, and they wrote a cherem on the first day of Iyar 1772, listed with many signatures to this cherem, including the Vilna Gaon. And in this cherem, he says the Hasidim are quoted, are called wise men in their own eyes and wonder workers, and whoever sits among them, even in an ignoramus and capable of reciting the Shema Yisrael, immediately upon joining them, comes to merit this world and the next in 1 hour. They are the same in the middle of the Shemone Esrei, interject obnoxious alien words in a loud voice, referring to Yiddish, conduct themselves like madmen, and explain their behavior by saying that they're in their thoughts, they soar in the most far-off worlds. The study of the Torah is neglected by them entirely, and they do not hesitate constantly to emphasize that one should devote oneself as little as possible to learning and not grieve too much over a sin committed. And it goes on in the cherem to say, every day for them is a holiday. They consistently mock the angels of the Lord and desecrate the men of greatness in the presence of ignoramuses. When they pray according to falsified text, they raise such a din that the walls quake, and they turn over like wheels with the head below and the legs above. He says they do somersaults in the middle of their davening. At the end of the cherem, he writes the following. He says that the all heads of the people shall robe themselves in the raiment of zeal for the Lord of hosts, to extirpate, to destroy, to outlaw, to excommunicate them. We here have already, with the help of his name, brought their evil intention to naught. And as here, so should they everywhere be torn up by the roots. Do not believe them, even if they raise their voices to implore you, for in the hearts their hearts are all seven horrors. So long as they do not make full atonement of their own accord, they should be scattered and driven away, so that not two heretics remain together, for the disbanding of their association is a boon for the world. Now the Hasidim countered with a chayim of their own. There was an attempt at reconciliation. Rav Menachem Mendel Vitebsk and Rav Shneur Zalman Liadi tried to approach the Vilna Gaon in 1772 and in 1777, but to no avail. There was another Chayrim proclaimed against the Hasidim in 1781. This may have been in response to the first written Hasidic work, the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, written by Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, one of the Baal Shem Tov's two major Talmidim, in 1780. However, these excommunications did not stop the tide of Hasidus. So it's a big question, because what do you do with the fact that the Gaol Hador, the Vilna Gaon, puts your movement in Chayrim? So it's very, very difficult. And it's fascinating how both the Hasidim and those opposed to Hasidus, called the Misnagdim, they were affected by earlier events. Hasidus was affected by the despair of the Chmelnytsky revolt and Shabtai Tzvi. And this is a way to bring people close, give them a feeling of warmth and a sense of belonging. And the Misnagdim were also affected by the suspicion caused by Shabtai Tzvi that Hasidus may turn into a sect that is deviant from halacha because of the rejection of the traditional reverence for learning and incidents of weird behavior by some Hasidim, like those who do not do somersaults during davening, not following Zemai Tefillah as well, claiming they need time to prepare. When the Vilna Gaon dies on Sukkot of 1797, the opponents of Hasidus claimed that the Hasidim held a feast and festivities after his death, and this aroused their fury. At the end of the day, there was no schism. So, for a number of reasons. First of all, one of the leaders of the Hasidic movement at the end of the 18th century was the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Chabad Rebbe. And Chabad is called by that name. Chabad Hasidism, it stands for Chachma Bina Vadas, and it represents the synthesis between Hasidus and Torah scholarship. Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi wrote the Tanya, which is the classic work of the philosophy until that point. But he also wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav, which was a halachic work. He was a first-rate Talmud Chacham, and he argued that criticism against Hasidus was based on ignorance. So he gave a tremendous amount of credibility to the Hasidic movement, because he was a top, first-rank posek, halachic leader, master. And additionally, even though the Vilna Gaon wrote letter after letter excommunicating them, his prized student, Chaim Volozhin, did not act the same way. He was just as critical, but there were no more calls for excommunication. Rabbi Lam, in his Sefer Torah Lishma, writes that, he cites Rav Baruch Levi Epstein, writes in Torah Tamima, that there was a comment made by the third of the Chabad Hasidim, Rav Menachem Mendel of Lubavitch, to his father. He says that the Hasidim do not appreciate the great kindness that the Gaon of Vilna did for them when he opposed the Hasidim, because were it not for the controversy, then there would have been cause to worry. For the ecstatic fervor and uplifted spirit inherent in the new movement would have ultimately resulted in the scorching of the Talmud by the fire of Kabbalah, and this hidden Torah would have diminished the image of the revealed Torah. In other words, there was this revolution of Hasidus, but there was an internal counter-revolution, and because the Vilna Gaon put so much pressure on Hasidus that they stayed within the fold. It never abdicated halacha, and eventually was embraced by Misnagdim. Another reason why there was partial reconciliation, less tension between Hasidim and Misnagdim, is that they both realized there was a much greater enemy, the Haskalah and the Enlightenment. Hasidim and Hasidus, the Hasidism and Hasidus became an extremely successful movement. By the 1840s and 1850s, Hasidus was the establishment in Poland and White Russia, while Hitnagdut would always be prime in Lithuania, which was very intellectual. What were the major points of contention between Hasidus and between Hasidim and Misnagdim? So one difference is immanence versus transcendence. Hasidim focus and Hashem is everywhere. There is no situation too mundane for his presence, and there is no request too mundane to ask for. Maloch al aretz kevodo, he's here. Misnagdim focus on transcendence. They will say that Hashem has been brought down too far. Hashem is not our friend. Familiarity breeds a lack of respect. Another difference was the tzaddik. Hasidim believed that the tzaddik was a conduit of holiness. People felt that they had a great man to go to, could understand and empathize with their problem and do something about it. That the tzaddik could daven and seek help. He was like a superman. They didn't feel that way about the rabbinic establishment. Hasidim break into different groups, so each will be concentrated around a tzaddik or a rebbe. The Misnagdim say this concept of a tzaddik is not a Jewish concept, how they understood a tzaddik was. According to Misnagdim, we have a rabbi to instruct us in law, but our relationship with God is personal. Others can inspire us, but it should not be part, essential part of our avoda, because they were scared of the whole Shabbosai Tzvi debacle. Another difference between the Misnagdim and the Hasidim is about evil. According to Hasidim, all evil has some good in it. There is no action that does not come from or engender something good. And in this way, Hasidim, or Hasidus, solve the problem of evil. It leads to tolerance of others and oneself for the failures. And this idea is very effective for the average Jew who doesn't feel so spiritual. Even if we make a mistake, there's probably a reason for it. Misnagdim say there is such a thing as evil, and to not recognize that is both foolish and dangerous. It's just a self-justification for not being as good as you can be. Another difference between Hasidus and Hasidim and Misnagdim is prayer. According to Hasidim, prayer was the center of their day, their gate to heaven. Preparation was stress and halacha was ignored because it was more important to have proper kavana than to daven on time. Anyone could pray, so this made everyone feel part of something that was not formally stressed as being so important. The Misnagdim said that too much focus on prayer takes away the stress on learning, which it did. And they complained that the Hasidim didn't concentrate on halachic times. They didn't care about that. Another difference between Misnagdim and Hasidim is Hasidim viewed joy as central. Rav Nachman of Breslov famously said, Mitzvah gedol yos besimcha tabid. Hashem wants us to be happy. That to uplift ourselves from suffering is a central part of our religion. Misnagdim say, though, that too much simcha leads to a lack of awe and reverence. Not only does it say mitzvah dolios besimcha, tamid, but it says also v'gilu bir adad. We also have to have trepidation. Also, the Hasidim stressed the idea of a Mashiach, and once Hasidus was accepted, it was okay to yearn for the Messiah, for Mashiach. We wanted to do it, but it was taboo after Shabbosai Tzvi. And also against Kabbalah, there was an idea that the masses can study Kabbalah. That was also something that Hasidus emphasized. Now, when we think of modern-day Hasidim, remember I asked my students, my high school students, what do you think about Hasidim? So what do you think when it first comes to mind, we think of Hasidim? So they think that they are simple, they're an insular community. When someone asks initially, what do you think Hasidim are all about? You see your average Hasid on the street. So many people, their initial inclination is that Hasidus, most Hasidic groups, maybe Chabad Hasidus is the exception, but most Hasidus groups are insular communities. They reject outside culture. They have a gullus mentality. They're trying to shield themselves from the outside world in order to maintain their values. What's fascinating is that idea that many people associate with 21st century Hasidim is not really a founding philosophy of Hasidus. Hasidus was created at a time of separation from outside culture, just like the Eastern European yeshiva, Litvish community. There was no embrace of outside culture. And there was Hasidim and the yeshiva community were deeply suspicious of outside culture in order to maintain their own traditions. They want to protect their unique heritage. Eastern European Jewish communities faced social, economic, and political challenges, including discrimination, poverty, and pogroms. So what's the response? The response from Hasidim was the emphasis not to try to fight for equality, but the response was to emphasize spiritual pursuits, religious devotion, and a strong sense of community. And that's why nowadays a strong emphasis or characteristic of 21st century Hasidim is this notion of insularity, notice of trying to stay as far away from outside culture, from the outside world as much as possible. At the same time, what's Neo-Hasidim, the Neo-Hasidic movement? So this is a revival of Hasid, what we've seen over the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years, and it's very popular now. This is a revival of Hasidic teachings within a modern context. Neo-Hasidus now is a focus on the soul of Judaism, the warmth of Judaism, teaching of Kabbalah and inner Torah to the modern Jew who doesn't find meaning in Judaism, who does ritual by rote, and there's a lot of apathy. And people who study, who follow this Neo-Hasidic movement, study the Noam Elimelech, Kedushas Levi, Likutei Maran, Sfarim of Chabad Hasidus, Sfas Emes, Rav Kook's writings, Pachad Yitzchak, and Tanya, Nesiva Shalom, and perhaps a senior spokesman of this movement is Rav Moshe Weinberger, and followers of this movement have tishes and classes on Hasidic thought with the belief that Hasidus helps us deal with the struggles of everyday life and also helps us deal with the feeling of a lack of connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with God. The Litvish approach focuses on Yira, more on Yira, on reverence, and the Hasidic approach is softer, more positive, focused more on Simcha. The challenge of Neo-Hasidus, of course, is that it shouldn't come at the expense of halacha. Neo-Hasidic activity should be in addition to and not instead of traditional learning. So a prominent member of the Neo-Hasidic movement made the point is that as much as it's a problem to be a vessel with no light, you cannot be a light with no vessel. So the argument is that the Litvish community sometimes is a vessel. So we have the structure, but no light inside. There's no inner feeling. But if you only have the inner feeling, the light, but you don't have the vessel, the structure, it's also a problem. It seems to me that the Neo-Hasidic movement of today is based on actually the Hasidic movement's founding principles. Because it's helping the Pintel Yid, the simple Jew, a modern Jew in the modern community who doesn't feel connected. And it's answering the problems that Hasid, and now the 21st century, Neo-Hasidism is answering the problems that Hasidus answered for many simple Jews in the 1700s and the 1800s, the beginning of the 1800s. And all these ideas that we find in the philosophy of Hasidus in its founding, the imminence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the idea of going to a tzaddik, that turning around evil and saying it's not so bad, and giving someone chizuk when they do something bad or see something bad, to turn it and find something positive in it. The idea of prayer, tefillah, being central. The idea of joy is central, focused on the Mashiach. So this is characteristic not just of the founding philosophy of Hasidus, but modern-day Neo-Hasidic movement. The Hasidic movement, other than the Chabad movement, in some sense has become characterized as a rejectionist community as opposed to openness to the simple Jew, because of the overriding concern in preserving the community in the face of assimilation. My hope is that the Neo-Hasidic and modern Orthodox communities will challenge each other to be better. That on the one hand, the more modern Litvish community should embrace the feel of Judaism, should embrace the experiential aspect of Judaism, and that the Neo-Hasidic community should make sure that they are ensuring that there is still halachic sensitivities, they're still working on halachic sensitivities and serious limud haTorah. The goal is We should learn from each other, take the best that each world has to offer in order to become a passionate, committed, halachically sensitive Jew who strives for excellence in mitzvah observance, Talmud Torah, and tefillah.